Tall Sky Podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Steven.
And Kyle.
And it's Monday, Holocult. You know what that means? You chose us to hang out with you and get you through this work week. Me and Kyle have been having mass technical difficulties for the last 2 hours trying to record this episode. Turns out that I was using the wrong adapter. It's weird.
Life is finicky like that.
Yeah, shout out to Google Chrome for being a piece of shit. Not a sponsor.
Ever.
Yeah. I got a nice little alien episode for you.
Who doesn't love alien episodes?
Yeah, we're getting into spooky season, so I'm thinking about maybe leaning into like some haunted stuff, but I'm going to get some alien episodes out of the way first. This one's pretty wild. Pretty wild. But before we get into it, got to get through all the business. If you're new here, me and Kyle go through some things. It takes a little bit. If you want to fast forward to the show, go to about 6 minutes and we'll get into the crux of the show. If you want to listen to us talk, feel free to hang out. If you're not new here, welcome back, you weirdo. So getting through the business, check it out. Check us out at all our social medias, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok, Twitter, Discord, Reddit. That was out of order, but it's fine. Search up the Hollow Sky Podcast. We'll be there. Come join the cult. Be part of the community. It's a good time. It's a good time. And if you have a paranormal experience you'd like for us to feature on a future episode of our listener experience show, Kyle has the details for you.
I do. HollowSkyPodcast@gmail.com. Write your story out. Shoot it over there. We're going to get it. You're going to be famous. And you're not going to know what to do with yourself.
I don't know what to do with myself now.
I don't either.
I'm famous.
I'm still sick. So yeah, I have that going for me.
Yeah. Everybody.
And we didn't win the Powerball. So there's that too.
Yeah. I tried to manifest it, but my manifestation.
That's probably a tough one to manifest.
Yeah. Well, I'm still working on them. So if you'd like to support this little journey we're on, you can head over to Patreon where you can find all kinds of good stuff over there. Patreon exclusive episodes. You get all the free episodes early and ad free. I know a lot of people don't like the ads. Sorry about you. You also get some casket breath jams over there. What else we got? Coupons for the merch store sometimes, and you get first notification of merch drops, all sorts of stuff. HollowSkyPodcast.com has a store. Go over there, check it out. You get all kinds of cool Hollow Sky swag. Shirts, hats, beanies, stickers, all kinds of stuff over there. Best thing you can do is share the show word of mouth. Just constantly, anybody who likes weird stuff, throw our name in the hat. Share the show on social medias when everyone drops. Just keep pushing it. Keep pushing it and expanding the listener base. That's how the show grows, and that's how we get to the end game of being able to do this all the time. Because if that comes to that, you're going to have much more content to enjoy. Or not enjoy, I don't know. Also, go to wherever you listen to podcasts, your podcatcher, if you will. Leave us a 5-star rating and review, and I'll gladly shout you out. This week's 5-star rating and review comes to us again, came back for another, from our friend Deuter McSauceman. That's fun to say. Again, his title is too long for me to read, so he says, good times with my 5 stars. Deuter says, Hollow MF and Sky is a standout project in an oversaturated genre. Steve and Kyle are two crazy funny dudes who research deep every time. Steve wants to fight all evildoers. Mad respect. Salute emoji. Now tied with tinfoil hat for my number one pod.
Hell yeah.
Well, Deuter, thanks for the kind words. That's a pretty big number one spot to be sharing there.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah. That's what we need to be. Everybody's number one. Hey, Holocult. We're back and excited to announce our continued partnership with ZocDoc. When it comes to your health, please, please leave it to a professional. I don't know about you guys, but my entire social feed has just been filled with different health trends, like red light therapy can solve every skin problem, and you should be slamming olive oil shots first thing in the morning, or coconut oil this, elderberry that. Well, ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. With ZocDoc, you can book in-network appointments with more than 100,000 doctors across every specialty, from mental health to dental health, primary care to urgent care, and more. You can filter doctors who take your insurance, who are located close by, who are a good fit for any medical need you may have, and are highly rated by verified patients. I haven't had to book a doctor's appointment, thankfully. I've been pretty healthy, but I have gotten on the app and kind of messed around with it a little bit, kind of booked mock appointments, and it is super easy. It's a one-stop shop for everything that you need. Find doctors in your area, doctors that take your insurance, doctors that can get you in within 48 hours. It's excellent. Excellent. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/hollow1 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/HOLO1. ZocDoc.com/hollow1. Hey, Holocult. We are back and excited to announce our continued partnership with Mood. Mood is an online cannabis company that's revolutionizing how we deal with life's challenges, from sleepless nights to stress-filled days. Mood.com has created an entire line of functional gummies that target specific health concerns with 100% federally legal THC blends, and they'll deliver them discreetly right to your doorstep. Mood's mantra is that cannabis should be accessible, affordable, convenient, and transparent. But most importantly, they believe in supporting American farmers who make all of this possible. Mood was created in 2002 as an online source for 100% federally legal cannabis grown on small, pesticide-free American farms. Mood has gummies for literally everything: immune support, menopause relief, PMS symptoms, mental clarity, sexual arousal, and each one is crafted using federally legal cannabis grown on small, family-owned American farms. That's no pesticides, no BS, and they ship to most U.S. states. Best of all, not only does Mood stand behind everything with an industry-leading 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I'd mentioned, Holocult listeners gets 20% off their first order with code HOLO. That's H-O-L-O. So head to Mood.com, browse their amazing selection of functional gummies, and find the perfect gummy for whatever you're dealing with. And remember to use our promo code HOLO, that's H-O-L-O, at checkout to save 20% on your first order. Manifest it.
Yes.
But thanks again for leaving us more kind words, Duder. I think you emailed us with the rest of the title last time, if I remember right. Anyway.
No, it's our responsibility to make up the rest of the title.
Oh, yeah. Good times with my spiritual homies.
There you go. I like that. Just I was thinking more sped ed, but.
Either or.
Spiritual homies is appropriate.
Yeah, that's the route I was taking there. Because it just says sp.
Although that is another good way to end it as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just doing sp. Sp.
Spooky friends.
Eh.
Pretty cool guys.
I like that one.
All right. Well, we appreciate you, Duder. Duder McSauceman. I hope that's your real God-given Christian name on your birth certificate, Duder McSauceman.
Awesome.
If it's not, you need to change it.
I agree.
I don't see any negatives here.
Yeah. Let's keep on this one.
That being said, we're jumping in. I know everybody likes to complain about how long it takes us to get here.
Woo-woo.
Especially when I say jumping right in. But we are.
It'll be okay.
So, this specific case I had never heard of before. I stumbled across it on an episode of Bedtime Stories, and I kind of got to digging through that, and I found a book that also chronicles sort of secondhand, sort of firsthand, this entire encounter. You can also find information on it from Reddit. You can find it in weirdnewjersey.com. You can find it on app.com, Wikipedia. It's more out there than I thought it was because I'd never heard of it before. But it is the McGuire Air Force Base incident, also known as the man who shot an alien. You don't hear that very often.
No, you can't go wrong with busting a cap in an alien's ass.
No, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
I'm here for y'all. You hear a lot about animal mutilations and human mutilations. There's not a lot of incidences where we get back at getting back.
Yeah. Definitely not a lot of get back episodes.
No. So this is kind of takes place from a perspective of one man, but it also involves like the perspective of a person that he interviewed. So it's kind of back and forth, but the main crux of this comes from a book that was released in 2018 titled Strange Craft, The True Story of Air Force Intelligence Officer's Life with UFOs. It was written by John L. Guerrera, and the book featured interviews with retired Air Force Major George Filer III. He recounts his time in the military and his extensive six-decade research into the subject of UFOs and how they really started to pop off after World War II. One particular account that stood out of the book took place in January 18th, 1978 at McGuire Air Force Base. To kind of set up the scene, I have to paint a picture of the layout of McGuire Air Force Base. And I'm going to start by telling you about Fort Dix. I don't know who named that. Wasn't me, though.
Some good names up in there.
Yeah. So Fort Dix was established on the 16th of July, 1917 as Camp Dix, about 18 miles southeast of Trenton, New Jersey. Camp Dix was home to the 153rd Depot Brigade. The role of World War I Depot Brigades were to receive recruits and draftees, then organize them and provide them with uniforms, equipment, and initial military training. The Depot Brigades also received soldiers returning from home at the end of the war and carried out their musterings out and discharges. With it handling so many soldiers, a small airfield was built on the outside of the perimeter of the base. This would grow to become McGuire Air Force Base. The whole layout of this specific base is now known as Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst, or JBMDL. The base is the only tri-service base in the United States Department of Defense and includes units from all six armed forces branches. The facility is an amalgamation of the United States Air Force, McGuire Air Force Base, the United States Army's Fort Dix, and the United States Navy's Naval Air Engineering Station Lakehurst, which were all merged into one on October 1st, 2009. So back in 78, Fort Dix and McGuire Air Force Base were only separated by a perimeter of fence line and some woods, which becomes integral to the story later on. So jumping into the early morning hours of January 18th, 1978, air tower controllers at Fort Dix began noticing odd radar anomalies, blips on the radar that weren't supposed to be there. They were fully aware that the adjacent McGuire Air Force Base may be running some early morning drills, so they checked their memos and flight schedule and realized that there weren't any drills taking place that morning. Around this time, multiple UFOs were being spotted over McGuire and Fort Dix. Air Force pilots approaching McGuire had observed strange, elongated, disc-shaped crafts near the bases and radioed the tower operators, who confirmed that they were tracking them on radar. At one point, one of the tower personnel stepped out on the observation deck and began to scan the sky with his binoculars. That's when he saw a light that stood out differently from the other air traffic surrounding the base. He described it as a circular blue-green light off in the distance. Sound familiar? He reported that almost immediately upon making eye contact with the thing, it blinked out of existence. Sound familiar?
It's hitting a little close to home there.
Sounds familiar, right? Almost as if it had known that it was being observed. Almost, he described it as like someone throwing a switch, turning a light off. It just blinked out of existence. So as they were keeping note on their radar, they weren't necessarily too concerned at the time, but they did put the word forward to have a patrol go out and check the area of the base where they thought the mysterious light was over and around. This didn't really even pique the interest of any higher ups at the time. Certainly not enough to send multiple personnel out to investigate. Instead, it was just one military police officer who was sent out. How would you like to be that guy?
I'm down.
Go check on this UFO.
I'm good with it because I'm going to be packing.
Oh, yeah. He was. So one Fort Dix military police officer who is usually listed as anonymous, but I found sources online that said his name was John Samuels. So take that for what it is. I don't know if it's a pseudonym, if it's really his name. That's the name that I came across. He gets in his Jeep and heads to the back side of Fort Dix in search of whatever he could see, just trying to find out what this light anomaly is. As he's going down the dirt slash gravel road that kind of leads around the back side of the base that separates Dix from McGuire, his radio starts to malfunction. Starts to get all kinds of static on his base radio. He's like, oh, that's weird. So he keeps continuing off on this dirt road, which on one side you have the Fort Dix training area, which at night there's not a lot going on. And on the other side, you have this old disused runway on the back of McGuire Airfield, which is also like not abandoned. They just don't use it anymore. There are lights. So that comes into play later too. There's a gate 5 on the back of this road, and it separates Brody Road from an intersection at Texas Avenue on the base. It's just kind of given people who are familiar with the area a generalization of where he is. So he's driving along this fence perimeter that's also got a little separation of trees. And as he's driving, his radio's starting to malfunction, and then his Jeep stalls out, stutters out. So he's like, okay.
It's classic alien. Engagement there.
It's like, okay, this is bizarre. So he's trying to start his Jeep up, and as he looks up, he sees it. A cylindrical shaped craft. He says about the same size as his patrol vehicle. He described it as completely featureless, oval shaped, emitting a blue green glow, and again, almost as if it was made out of a solid piece of steel. He couldn't see any rivets in it, any bolts, any seams. It was just a solid oblong shape.
Isn't that crazy that a lot of reports have that same description?
Yeah.
And I bring that up because that suggests to me that in a lot of these reports, you are awfully damn close to these things. Because imagine how, like, what that would take to be close enough to notice that. You know, you're talking like in the same room close.
Yep. And just to look up and see that would be, I don't know what I would do. Like I said, all I saw was a light off in the distance the other day. And I was just like mesmerized, like completely focused on it.
Yep.
But I got to give kudos to MP Samuels because he had enough wherewithal to roll down his window to see if the craft was making any noise. He was just kind of mentally recording what he was seeing, what he was hearing. He wanted to see if there was a propulsion system. He wanted to know how this craft was kept airborne. And as he's listening, it's just silence. He noted that he heard nothing from the craft. The entire area was eerily silent for a few seconds. Then he said he heard from behind him what sounded like someone running in the gravel of the road, bipedal footsteps in the gravel coming up on him. So he's like, okay, what's going on? Then all of a sudden it goes past him and he sees what he thought was a man sprint past his patrol Jeep headed directly toward the craft. He couldn't make out any details because it was dark and he just had the lights emitting from the craft because his Jeep had shut down. He could see the silhouette of a person, a humanoid person, between him and the craft. Immediately thinking this was some sort of security breach by maybe like a Soviet spy, and considering the time period, it's reported that Samuels shot one round from his 45 into the air as a warning shot. Other reports said that he fired at the craft, which I'm not sure which one's which, but I feel like firing at the craft is a little extreme.
Yeah.
We're just going to say he fired a warning shot into the air. Immediately when the report of his gun went off, the craft shot directly into the sky among 11 other crafts that he noticed as it went up there. He He'd seen them in a formation. This thing shot directly up with them and they took off. So with the little bit of light that the craft produced now gone, Samuels got out and decided to search the area on foot because he knew that this person did not jump into the craft as soon as it went off, because he went from firing his gun to this thing just disappearing, essentially just flying off. As he's scanning the area, he's looking through the trees and stuff. Then he hears the footfalls again. He turns back to the road and, sprinting away from him this time, he locked on the person again and he commanded them to stop, which they didn't. At this point, something happened that made Samuel question like what he'd gotten himself into. This person turned and ran toward the 8 to 10 foot tall fence separating the two bases and leaped over it without touching the fence.
Oh, damn.
Boom, landed on the other side.
That's new.
Yeah, just up and over. He approached the fence and watched as the intruder started to sprint out across the runway. The unused runway, but it's still well lit. Fearing a breach of security and the safety of both bases, Samuel raised his sidearm and fired multiple shots at the intruder, several of them striking at center mass and causing the intruder to lurch forward and tumble onto the runway. Samuels immediately got in to call it back on the radio, and he realized that his radio is working now. He calls it in. He said, "There, we've had a security breach. I've emptied my firearm. We've got a man down on the old abandoned runway at McGuire. I'm going to head to the main gate." Gets in, starts his Jeep up. He heads to the main gate of McGuire Air Force Base. They let him in and he heads toward the old runway. It used to be the New Jersey Air National Guard hangar there on McGuire. I don't know if anybody's familiar with it, but they just put that in the notes. As he approached, he noticed several patrols had already rushed to the scene at this point. He got out of his vehicle and headed toward the patrolman. That's when he saw it. He said it was about 4 feet tall, gray, brown in color, with an abnormally large head. He said there was no discerning facial features aside from large almond-shaped black eyes. It had long arms and a slender body. It appeared to be nude, and its skin looked hairless, wet, and shiny, very reptile-like. He then noted that the dead being began to give off a bad stench, like ammonia, which we've heard from other alien encounters.
Yes, we have.
Like the Virginia UFO incident, they said that one smelled like ammonia. There were a few others that I can't place, but that Brazil incident, the Silver Sisters reported encountering a strange creature with oily black skin, large red eyes, a slit for a mouth. Among with the visual descriptions, witnesses described a strong, potent smell of ammonia associated with the alien or its craft. So they kind of link up. I also thought it was interesting that, like with this particular case, the firearm worked. But yeah. You have other cases like Hopkinsville, where the bullets were just pinging off of them. They were just ricocheting right off of them. So I'm wondering if there's like different species that are like have different levels of defense against our firearms, or how that works out. So at this time, MPs roped off the area and the Air Force Office of Special Investigations took over. High-level blue berets, as they were called, quickly imposed a curtain of secrecy with at least a dozen guards armed with M16 surrounding the ropes and barring anyone but top brass and base photographers from approaching. Later that day, a team from Wright Air Force Base, long rumored to be the depository of alien bodies and UFOs, arrived in a Lockheed C-141 Starlifter. Personnel laid the strange body in a wooden box, utilized a portable tank to spray it with clear liquid, and they placed the box into a large metal container and loaded it onto the plane, and it lifted off for return to Wright-Patterson. Up to this point in the story, this is all secondhand from Jeffrey Morse. He was an MP on McGuire. He was one of the ones that first went up and saw the body of the alien. Well, saw the other MPs seeing the body of the alien. He went on to interview Samuels. So he's telling this second story, second hand from Samuels. So Jeffrey Morse is a pseudonym who claimed to be an Air Force security policeman, a Blue Beret regular on McGuire at the time of the incident. Morse witnessed the UFOs and arrived in time to see the mysterious corpse from a distance of about 50 feet. While Morse didn't get a clear look at the being's face, hands, or feet, he produced a simple sketch that was, quote, my impression of something human or something not human. Morse said that all personnel were threatened with court-martial if they said anything about the encounter. 2 days later, Morse and two other witnesses were flown to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, where they were interrogated by military and civilian officials, signed forms swearing them to secrecy, and were quickly transferred to separate bases overseas. Morse to Okinawa, Japan. Morse would later claim that his decision to come forward with his story resulted in government surveillance and intimidation, including interference with his ability to obtain government jobs after the conclusion of his military service. Morse's account is supported by retired U.S. Air Force Major George A. Filer III. Filer's account is the one that's in the book that I mentioned at the beginning. Filer later became the Eastern Director of the Mutual UFO Network, MUFON, and a member of the Disclosure Project. Filer was stationed at McGuire Air Force Base as an Air Force briefing officer in 1978. His responsibilities included compiling external intelligence report to be delivered to senior commanders and presented to political committees within the U.S. Senate. So he's a pretty high-level guy. Then to compile, like, intelligence reports and take them to the big dogs. He noted that he was not present at the time of the incident, but he arrived later that morning. He came onto the base at about 4 a.m., He noted unusual emergency activity on the base and that response vehicles and a roped off area was on the old runway. As he passed through the guard gate, he asked what was going on. One of the men on duty told him in a hushed voice that an alien had been shot. At first, he thought the guy was just goofing off about it. About this time, he saw the big C-141 Starlifter approaching that they ended up loading the body onto. He knew right then and there that something big was going on because a Starlifter is not a craft that was standard issue at the airfield in 78. Like that was a big deal. He immediately knew something big was happening. Filer was informed of the shooting from his commanding officer and tasked with preparing a report to brief Major General Thomas Sadler, commander of the base's 21st Air Force Military Lift Command. Filer interviewed Air Force personnel who participated in the incident. Filer claimed that photographs were taken of the body, but he was prevented in viewing them at the last second as the decision to allow him to view the photos were revoked. When Filer had completed his report and interviews, he arrived to brief Sadler, the commander of the 438th Security Police Squadron. Morse, supervisor, was speaking to the Major General at the time. On the way out the door, the police squadron commander told Filer that he had already briefed the general and that Filer was no longer needed, and the decision to allow him to compile the briefing had been reversed. As he left, Sadler still waved Filer into his office and presented his read-only report. In case of listening devices, the commander read the report in silence and the two men did not discuss it. Filer would claim separately that he was told not to give the briefing because it was too hot. A change in protocol had apparently taken place, and it was now clear that a cover-up effort was being implemented on the base regarding the issue. Orders came down the wire to restrict and limit access to everyone outside of a very select group of highly authorized personnel. But Filer continued to pursue private inquiries. As he's kind of searching through and interviewing people on his own time, he found an Air Force incident form. It's called the DD Form 1569, which is an official incident report for the Air Force regarding the incident. This is where he learned that the body of the alien was taken via the Starlifter, an armed military escort, to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio. Again, we all know that Wright-Patterson runs deep in UFO lore. being basically ground zero for Project Sign, Project Grudge, Project Blue Book. Like Wright Patterson is in the midst of everything. It's like right up there with Area 51.
Oh yeah, there's definitely lots and lots of conversations and evidence of it having part in alien technology and alien bodies.
Yeah. He also learned that the MP that shot the alien was flown out to Wright Patterson shortly thereafter for a quote unquote formal debriefing. That individual would never return to Fort Dix. Rumors were that he had been transferred to a classified facility elsewhere in the U.S., though no official record of such reassignment has ever been released. Morse came forward to UFO researcher and writer Leonard H. Stringfield in 1980 to share his account of the fatal alien encounter at Fort Dix McGuire. Stringfield and his colleague, former assistant director of NICAP Richard Hall, interviewed Morse over the next few years. They found Morse to be credible and consistent in his story. Hall was able to authenticate all but one of the officers that Morse said interrogated him at Wright-Patterson, including Brigadier General, although the information about their assignments at the time of the supposed interrogation was unavailable. So Morse, who came forward, like all of his stories kind of checking out here. He said everybody that interviewed him at Wright-Patterson were there at the time. It's also thought that Morse was the one who produced the DD form that Filer found.
It's so crazy how like quickly the military pulls the trigger on like separating all the guys and just shipping them off to the middle of nowhere, essentially.
Yep. We heard this. The exact same thing happened in Devil's Den. They split them up, sent them off.
Yeah, that's right. It's just, to me, it's crazy that they, and I guess it's to keep guys from conspiring or maybe motivating each other to come forward. You know what I mean? Because if you think about it, anytime you start a new job or a new situation, you're kind of gun shy. You feel out the environment that you're in. You're not really like taken to people right off the rip. You know, you kind of feel alone and singled out.
Yeah.
Not to mention they would go, and then they probably had superiors that had heavy orders of monitoring everything they do.
Yeah. I feel like if you have one person come forward with a crazy story, it's a lot easier to paint, you know, the light of craziness on one person, as opposed to having a whole group of guys that have military credential come forward and be like, yeah, this happened. Yeah, this happened. Yeah, this happened. That's a lot harder. That's a lot bigger can of worms to put a lid on than just one person.
Yeah. And to be honest, I mean, it probably wouldn't take much for the military to, like, if you were working at this base and then they ship you off to another one, it probably wouldn't take them much to wipe your record from said first base. Yep. Just be like, no, you didn't. Prove that you were there.
Especially if you were just like, if you were low level, like just a military police officer or something. Not that that's not important, but it's different from being like a brigadier general, you know. It's kind of easier to move you around and make things not so paper trailish, I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
So that DD Form 1569... that was prepared about the shooting, it was directed toward Colonel Landon, the commanding officer of McGuire Air Force Base, Brigadier General Brown, of the 21st Air Force at McGuire, and the Air Force Office of Special Investigations, according to Stringfield. The report listed Morse and other security policemen involved, as well as the Fort Dix MP who shot the strange being. Stringfield omitted the names from the copy of the incident report he revealed in his 1985 paper on the matter, which I looked for. I could not, for the life of me, find the DD 1569 report, because I was trying to find that. Could not find it. If it's out there, I don't know where.
Hey, Holocult. You may have heard of HelloFresh. They send chef-crafted recipes and fresh ingredients to your home. But this summer, they made their biggest menu upgrade yet. This isn't the HelloFresh you remember. It's bigger. HelloFresh has doubled its menu, Now you can choose from 100 options each week, including new seasonal dishes and recipes from around the world. It's healthier. Feel great with their new healthier menu filled with high protein and veggie packed recipes. It's also tastier. Get steak and seafood recipes delivered every week at no extra cost. Now there's 3 times more seafood on the menu. Also, new seasonal produce each week, from snap peas to stone fruit, corn on the cob, and more. Me and my partner use HelloFresh, and I cannot recommend it enough. The last HelloFresh meal we had was the tomato, mozzarella, and creamy pesto panini. It was delicious. The ingredients were fresh, and everything came together perfectly. The sourdough bread was a great base for a combination of the rich cream cheese and fresh mozzarella. That was balanced out perfectly with the acidity from the fresh tomato and the bright pesto. The arugula salad with Dijon vinaigrette was a great light side to round out the meal. It was as simple as making a grilled cheese, but exponentially more tasty. The best way to cook just got better. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hollow1Pod10FM now to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life. One per box with active subscription. Free meals applied as discount on your first box. New subscribers only and varies by plan. That's HelloFresh.com/HOLO10FM to get 10 free meals plus a free item for life.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Yes. I need to try to find Stringfield's paper that was released, but these are so old now. He originally came forward in 80. That's almost 50 years ago.
It's crazy that's been that long.
So I didn't have much luck, but I'll have to go back and look. Morse had already blacked out the social security numbers of the listed next to each individual to protect their privacy. Without that specific information, Hall could not confirm the identities or the assignments of the enlisted men. The McGuire Fort Dix alien shooting was among cases investigated by the National Institute for Discovery Science, founded by none other than millionaire real estate developer and aerospace entrepreneur Robert Bigelow.
Robert Bigelow. I knew you were going to say that name.
Bigelow. From 1995 to 2004, NIDS studied UFOs and other anomalous phenomena, most famously owning Skinwalker Ranch in Utah. The group dug into the McGuire Fort Dix alien shooting case in 2000. The NIDS investigator confirmed that Morse, whose true identity was in their files, did in fact work as an airman E4 at McGuire Air Force Base, but they were unable to locate him in order to conduct an interview. They also could not find Samuels, the MP that's said to have shot the alien. NIDS did, however, contact several Air Force officials who were assigned to McGuire Air Force Base at the time of the incident. On January 18th, Colonel Kenneth S. Landon, base commander, who was noted in the incident report, Lieutenant Colonel Francis Markowicz, commander of the 438th Security Police Office Squadron, who was also listed in the incident report as having investigated the shooting, Air Force Office of Special Investigations, Detachment Commander, and Major General Thomas M. Sadler, the 21st Air Force Commander. The NIDS says the 4 main people on the base in 78 who should have known the UFO sightings were interviewed. None of them claimed to know anything about the alleged sighting, the alien close encounter, or any shooting, reported the NIDS investigator Roger Pinson. In addition, Mazurkiewicz said he would not have been listed as an investigator in the incident report. Rather, the superior to whom an investigator would have reported. So he's just saying he's too high up to have been doing the investigation himself. The 438th commander identified several discrepancies in the way the report was filed. He explained that if Morse was a security police officer, he would have had access to blank forms, but wouldn't necessarily, quote, have the right technique in completing them unless he had been a desk sergeant or performed administrative duties. The former squad commander opined the incident report was probably a forgery. So like everyone who had any pull at the base is completely writing the incident off that it never happened.
Finally, it almost sounds like they're making some of the players disappear.
Yeah, because they couldn't find they had Morse's actual identity and they can't find him.
Yeah.
Who
like it makes me wonder if they just move him to a black site, move him to a special unit, like, oh, now you're in the shit, whether you like it or not. Or if they deem you a loose end and they're like, well, it's time to tie up some of these. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's what they did in Devil's Den. Remember when he went back, they kept him on base, but they just had him painting signs, sanding sign. He'd finish painting, sand it down. Finish painting, sand it down.
It also wouldn't be hard, though, to keep your name in active duty on a base, and then you're not there. You've been ghosted, but they're going to pretend like you're not.
Yeah. It's just sus that they all are like, nope, this didn't happen. This didn't happen. None of this is legit. But you have a paper trail that says it does happen. You know,
I mean, orders are orders. A lot of guys are going to follow orders no matter what they are.
Yeah.
And if they get told to wipe it under the rug, that's what they're going to do.
Yep. Finally, the NIDS contacted, quote, Colonel B, a retired judge advocate general, JAG colonel, who Morse claimed had interrogated and debriefed him at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. In Morse's response, saying that he was playing good cop, bad cop at the time of the scenario. The officer confirmed that he had been a JAG at McGuire Air Force Base at the time of the UFO incident, but he'd never heard of the situation, never been to Wright-Patterson, and had no knowledge of Morse being interrogated. None of these four men recalled even working with General Filer. General Filer was a big name at the base. He said he answered and talked to Sadler, who says that he never worked with him. So that's like
a lot of runaround there.
Yeah. Like what?
How do you not know who like the biggest name on the base is? You are going to know who that is.
Yeah. And being tasked by your commanding officer to interview all these people, take all these notes and present them to their higher ups. And then once it all starts coming out, the higher ups being like, nah, we don't know who that is.
Yeah. Right.
Like Filer compiled things to take forth to the Senate. Like he spoke on the Senate floor based on things from McGuire Air Force Base. And they're like, nah, we didn't work with him. That didn't happen.
Yeah, it just sounds like they're just straight up wiping it under the rug and just trying to make it all disappear.
Yeah, the NIDS
like it never happened.
The NIDS report did not do it any favors because based on finding zero corroboration with the 1978 McGuire Air Force Base incident during its preliminary investigation, the NIDS hypothesized that the case was a hoax, but they still marked it pending. So they didn't write it off as a hoax. They did address and acknowledge the possibility that they were being deceived by senior military officials who could have been protecting their oath of secrecy by denying all knowledge. But the NIDS remarked that Pinson had extensive training in interviewing and interrogation techniques as well as detection of deception. Pinson had cold called the subjects and they replied to his questions without hesitation, leading the NIDS to believe that they were probably being truthful. So they acknowledged that they could have been lied to by people who probably make a good living lying, but they were probably being truthful. So that's kind of where the investigation of this case of the alien, unfortunately, ends. The NIDS report kind of like put the nail in the coffin, but there are details and things that happen that like kind of link to other alien cases. Like I said, the ammonia smell from the dead alien. Stringfield wrote that a vomit inducing stench, like a combination of battery acid and ammonia, also prevailed at an alleged crash site of a flying saucer in 1954, in which dead extraterrestrials were scattered about the New Mexico desert. In James Fox's 2022 documentary, Moment of Contact, multiple witnesses described a horrible ammonia-like odor, or alternately, a smell worse than sulfur, when they encountered a living, or when they encountered living and dead alien beings following a UFO crash in Varginha, Brazil in 1996. The scent remained in one of the women's nasal passages for weeks, it's reported, no matter how she tried to flush it out. Back in 1933, a man in Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, discovered a bell-shaped UFO landed alongside a desolate road between Cherryville and Moorestown. He poked his head into the craft and found a small control chamber only about 4 feet high that was unoccupied but smelled of ammonia. It's just like, it's a detail that links this to other notable UFO alien encounters, which again, kind of like we talked about in your last episode, it's a small detail that I feel like would easily be overlooked and omitted. Like if you were going to hoax it, why would you put that in there?
Yeah.
Especially, I'm assuming not knowing that about the crash site in 1954, the Brazil encounter didn't happen until 1996, and probably nobody probably knew about the one in 1933. So like, it's weird that this all kind of links together.
Yeah. It's disturbing to think that these little grays run around smelling like cat piss.
Yeah. And there's a science behind it. I found a Reddit post really? Where a person broke this down, and it gets real scientific-y, but it is interesting that the ammonia smell of these extraterrestrials may be legit. So molecular astrophysicist Clara Sosa Silva wrote a 2019 Scientific American opinion column titled, quote, "When we finally find aliens, they might smell terrible." In the column, Silva postulated that life on planets less dominated by oxygen might thrive on other gases. She pinpointed phosphine, a foul, fishy, and toxic to us humans gas, as a determiner for locating life on exoplanets, since it can only be produced by biological entities. But that would mean that extraterrestrials who produce phosphine or perhaps ammonia might naturally be repulsive to us and vice versa. According to a Massachusetts Institute of Technology study published in 2022, ammonia is a biosignature gas that space telescopes could search for when examining exoplanets' atmospheres for life. Using transit spectroscopy?
Yeah.
Spectroscopy.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I've heard that.
Nailed it. So basically determining the chemical composition of a planet's atmosphere via starlight passing through it. Ammonia plays a large role in biochemistry and is highly soluble in water. Its presence in a planet's atmosphere could indicate that biological life is producing ammonia in substantial amounts. The MIT scientists proposed that a planetary scenario called a cold harbor world, in which life evolved with hydrogen-nitrogen atmosphere instead of an oxygen atmosphere. These beings would have developed a catalytic machinery that can break down triple chemical bonds of molecular nitrogen and extract energy by fixing and converting atmospheric hydrogen and nitrogen into ammonia. In short, if there's any truth to the multiple accounts of aliens reeking of cat piss and ammonia, perhaps they originate from planets speculated by the MIT. I also want to note that found this while I was researching here that I don't feel like anybody has noted on when talking about this. This may be a reason why McGuire was kind of a choice for these UFOs to check out in 78, because it is site of one of the worst like nuclear mishaps on U.S. soil that nobody knows about. So it's the Bomark missile accident. Bomark site RW01 is a 75-acre fenced-off site contaminated primarily with weapons-grade plutonium, highly enriched and depleted uranium. On June 7th, 1960, an explosion in a CIM-10 Bormack missile fuel tank caused the accident and subsequent contamination. The explosion occurred at Launcher Shelter 204 at McGuire Air Force Base, Ocean County, New Jersey, approximately 16 miles southeast of Trenton. Launcher Shelter 204 was one of 54 shelters located at McGuire Air Force Base, operated by the 46th Missile Defense Squadron. On June 7th, 1960, an explosion in a helium tank between missiles fuel tank took place in Shelter 204, causing a fire in a liquid-fueled nuclear-tipped Bomark missile. The fire burned uninhabited for about 30 minutes. Firefighting activities using water as a suppressant were conducted for 15 hours. As a result, materials from the shelter flowed under the front of the shelter doors, down the asphalt apron, to the street between the row of shelters, and directly into a drainage ditch.
Ooh. That's solid work there.
Ooh.
Exactly what you want happening.
Contamination was restricted to an area immediately beneath the weapon and adjacent elongated area approximately 100 feet long. Nuclear response team from Griffiths Air Force Base found no trace of dispersed radiation during checks outside of the facility's boundaries. A significant fraction of radiological material contained in the weapon was shipped to Medina Base in San Antonio, Texas. According to the Trenton Times, in June 1987, traces of radioactive substances and nuclear warheads were found about 1/2 mile from the site. And that was almost 10 years later. A 1992 report, Air Force wrote that the missile launcher from Shelter 204 had been removed from the shelter shortly after the incident. No records about the manner of disposal of the missile launcher ever existed. They found 5 anomalous areas which could represent the buried launcher. So they just buried this thing. Anyway, I just wanted to note that because you hear of a lot of UFOs and stuff, especially in America, around nuclear missile sites, around nuclear test sites. I thought it was weird that this particular case happened at a spot where there was 40 plus nuclear warheads stationed at one time.
Yeah, I feel like that is definitely a big draw as to what brought them there to the first place.
Yeah. I found another incident on Reddit as I was looking that took place around McGuire Air Force Base. So the Reddit poster said, I was an active duty United States Air Force airman assigned to McGuire Air Force Base in Burlington County, New Jersey in the early 2000s. I myself did not witness anything, but I worked directly with people involved in this incident, including my roommate as well as my supervisor. On the night of April 6, 2004, at around 01:30, the McGuire control tower spotted what they believed to be a small plane coming in for a landing. This had actually happened in the past. Small planes would get confused and accidentally land at McGuire instead of Cross Keys. Not a common thing, but with fatigue and flying at night, it has happened before. Relayed to me by someone in air traffic control, as the plane approached the base, the tower contacted security forces, but the plane was not a plane at all. But instead, it was a silver disc the size of a car that did have some sort of external running lights. The tower observed this craft descend into the western side of the flight line in front of the National Guard ramp, which sounds very similar to where the alien was shot at.
Yeah.
I was told this was seen by multiple airmen with binoculars and was possibly also seen and recorded by their security system. At the time, the National Guard was on alert with their KC-135s, and there were approximately 15 maintenance airmen working on craft who witnessed the silver disc land directly in front of them. As soon as the internal security unit drove out to confront whatever it was, it shot up into the night sky at a high rate of speed. Of note, I was told that on the morning of the next day, someone claiming to be from MUFON showed up at the main gate asking for information on the incident. The same day, April 7th, a team of OSI agents showed up on a C-17 and inspected the area of the landing. I was told that the airmen in the tower had to sign NDAs. No one working on the flight line or working in security forces had to sign anything. By the end of the week, our commander told us that we would told us there would be nothing in the security forces incident blotter and that it was being called a UAV of unknown origin. Whatever happened, it unsettled quite a few of us. I got to talk to some of the maintenance airmen who witnessed it, And they were adamant that this thing was no UAV, no actual aircraft. It was, quote, a chrome disc, classic flying saucer. It landed in front of us. That's what they told me. I also want to point out that this specific area is not very far from the New Jersey Pine Barrens, where you got the Jersey Devil lore. Like, it is a heavily paranormal area. Like, the whole area has just kind of got a thin veil over it. So that combined with the nuclear mishap may be why so many things are drawn to this specific area and the specific Air Force base.
Yeah, I'm kind of dumbfounded by how the military reacts in some of these cases. Kind of like this last guy in the watchtowers, they just had to sign NDAs. You know, no big deal. But then the ones that were involved in the shooting get transported out. I'm sure they had to sign NDAs as well, but maybe not. I don't know. It's interesting to, like, because with the shooting, there's so many different routes you could go with that. Covering up, because you could have played it off like it was just an intruder.
Yeah, I was thinking that too. Like,
you know, because like, you're not, that way you're not just sweeping the whole thing under the rug. You're creating, because you know as well as I do, they could have went out and found somebody.
Oh, yeah.
Put them on a runway and put a couple rounds in them and said, hey, it was an intruder. He didn't follow commands, so on and so forth. You know, this transpired.
I also am curious if, like, military police have to keep record the same way, like, civilian police do. Like, when they discharge their firearm, I think they have to fill out all sorts of different, like information and shit. I wonder if that's similar. I'm assuming it probably is.
I would imagine so.
Also, I think another reason probably why this was so hush hush was that it was like in the midst of the Cold War, and you essentially have, if word got out, you would have someone actively make their way on to a U.S. nuclear missile base, which does not look good in the light of anyone, especially like the Soviet Union. And especially in Americans who are relying on these bases to protect them, you know?
Yeah, you're right. That probably does result in a lot of the, I want a complete cover up.
Yeah.
And this never happened.
I feel like that if the time period would have been a little bit different, I think, feel like it may have been handled differently, but considering it was in the midst of the Cold War and that was did have nuclear missiles on site.
Yeah, I agree. You're probably like right there. Probably. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense, because you're definitely not going to want any rumor floating around that your base got violated.
No. I also should make note that this specific area was well into the drone flap from the beginning of this year, the end of last year.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah. Well into the drone flap, and I don't know if it was... if it's McGuire or if it was one of the bases connected to it, but they're also responsible for producing and creating some of the big drones that the military uses. Some of those big, like 9-footers, the big ones. But I thought that it was weird that the drone flap also kind of took place around here. I need to look into it to see if this was some of the military airspace that these drones were passing over into. Because that happened quite a few times.
I'll bet it was
connected. Because, yeah, I mean, it's obviously got a lot of attention from whatever these things are.
Yeah. I'll bet it was. I bet that was on the drone list.
Yeah. But that's what I got about the man who shot an alien. Again,
I'd never even heard anything about that before.
No, me either.
Dude straight just got him.
Yeah. Just put him down. He's probably on ice at Wright-Patterson.
I wouldn't doubt it at all. It's crazy. Like I said, it's crazy how the response to some of these cases are from the military.
It makes you wonder how much stuff doesn't get out.
I'll bet far more doesn't get out than we could ever even realize.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of guys are real like afraid, because all it takes is like one or two of these guys that come forward to just disappear and get got. It's going to shut a lot of other guys up.
Yeah. Well, that, and you're talking guys that view like dishonorable discharge or things like that as life ending. You have, massive military you know that those contacts that those guys have are legit, and they could ruin your life without killing you.
And that's
they could absolutely destroy your life.
That's what Morse said happened to him. You know, they moved him to Japan. And he said he tried to get any, he was blacklisted from government jobs, blacklisted from the military. Like it just shut his life down essentially.
Yeah. Well, think about that too. Like they could have moved him and then put him on a no flight list back.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like there's so many things you could do that are just absolutely fucked, that a normal person doesn't have a lot of control over.
Yeah.
Like there's a lot of ways for your life to be ruined. And it's interesting. It's interesting to contemplate that. And I think people put far too much into that idea that, oh, there's too many people involved, it would definitely get out. I don't buy that.
No, me either.
I don't buy that, man, because they're like, I think military guys, for the most part, especially in higher positions, take their jobs extremely fucking serious.
Yeah, I do too.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you think about your special ops guys and shit. I think they take their job extremely serious, and their lips are tight. They ain't letting shit out.
Yep, I'm in the same camp. Especially guys that are like high level brass.
Yeah.
It probably happens not often, but a lot of these guys have probably seen paperwork come across their desk, seen photos come across their desk, and they are well tuned in to tuning out.
Well, think about like some of the fucking calls we've gotten about homie seeing Bigfoot.
Oh yeah.
While military training. And then and like instantly all the guys are like,
don't say that on the radio.
Stop. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah.
And they all know.
And they're being boots. They're being suits on the ground the next morning, you know, by just even mentioning that on the radio.
Yep.
It's crazy.
It is crazy. It is crazy. But I mean, I think it happens a lot more than we realize. Oh, and then we'll ever find out. Because a lot of guys just won't talk about it.
No. No, it does make you wonder how much shit is just swept under the rug.
I bet they have a ton of information.
Oh yeah. That's why we'll never get real disclosure.
No.
It's all just trickle down bullshit.
Every once in a while a guy will stick it back and get a rumor out there. But in today's world, most people aren't even gonna fucking believe it anyways.
No, they don't like they don't care. And I think that plays to the military's hand too. You know, like people just aren't that interested at this point. So if shit does leak out that's legit, they don't even have to like have near the cleanup squad that they did back then, because people just aren't paying attention.
No, and I feel like even though like times were way different, I just feel like when some of those stories hit fire, they hit. Like people believed.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I feel like the general impression is that people didn't believe as much back then, I feel like they did.
Oh yeah, look at Roswell.
Yeah.
Before the cover-up started in Roswell, how many fucking newspapers said flying saucer crashes in the desert? Tons.
Yeah. Yeah, and like to this day is one of the biggest UFO stories
ever.
Ever.
And then it morphed into weather balloon crashes, this, that, and the other. But at the beginning, everything was flying. It was like every newspaper had flying saucer crashes in New Mexico desert.
Yeah. And to this day, like I said, if anybody knows any UFO story, that's the one.
Dude, and just as a testament, to how things go now, think about the things that have happened in the last 2 years, right? You have the Brazilian face peelers that were hovering around, legit, like literally peeling people's faces off.
Yeah.
And everybody was just like, that's weird. That's
Miami Mall.
The Miami Mall incident, which is the largest call in of police force units that I've seen since 9/11, which they said is extremely out of protocol to have all of their law enforcement in one spot without it being something absolutely major. You know, if it's a fight, you're not going to, even if it's a big fight, a fight of 30 kids, you're not going to send 198 police cars there.
No.
193, however many it was. I also saw a clip, or I also saw a reel where that incident is now classified.
That's interesting. If that's true, that's interesting.
If it were just kids fighting, why is it classified? Like I said, where's the CCTV footage?
You know what's crazy about that whole incident? Now that I think about it, there's not even people spoofing footage from that incident.
Nope.
There's like, because it would be easy for somebody to be like, record it, say today, and be like, look, this was during the incident. There's nothing going on. It was all bullshit. There's not even that floating around.
Nope. No CCTV footage. Like, it's a big mall. There's a ton of stores there. There's not even footage of the kids fighting.
Right.
Which is crazy. There's no cell phone footage. Walk through a busy mall and look at how many people are on their fucking phones.
Yeah.
If there was a fight or something, hey, someone would record it.
Oh yeah.
Because it's a constantly world star, you know, this, that, and the other. So something had to happen. And there's accounts that there were high level military there confiscating people's phones, deleting all the media, just finishing it. Because at the same time, wasn't there a big like social media blackout that happened, an electric blackout that happened?
That's what I remember hearing.
That's crazy. That's crazy. And now nobody even talks about it. Now that's nothing.
Yeah, it's gone.
Same way with the Las Vegas alien incident.
Yep.
Like the police officer saw this thing fall to earth. They get a UFO call, and now like nobody talks about it. Just nobody's interested.
Yep. The whole thing's disappeared.
It's crazy.
You know, even the drones. That nobody talks about that. That's gone.
Yep. It's crazy. We were supposed to get answers on the drones, but we saw how well that went.
And you see how many people care.
Yep. Me and you and the Holocult.
Right. Nobody gives a shit.
It's crazy.
It's nuts.
It's crazy. They've got us so just beat down and just locked into our own little bubble of trying to survive that who knows.
Nobody cares about shit, man.
Oh, it's nuts. But yeah, that's what I got about the old alien shooting there. If you guys want to check out the book again, it's called Strange Craft: The True Story of an Air Force Intelligence Officer's Life with UFOs, written by John L. Guerrera, and it interviews retired Air Force Major George Filer III, who was kind of high up in McGuire Air Force Base, unless you ask the people above him who said that he didn't work there. Meh, I don't know. Anyway, that's what I got for you today. Hope you guys have a good week. Hope work goes well. Till we meet again, check us out on our social medias and stay safe, stay weird. And I don't know, man, if you see an alien, you might try to go at it. I don't know. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this. Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.